ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this week's episode of the Bombercast. It is the post-Collingwood victory episode, so a very exciting episode for all Bombers fans out there. I'm, of course, Sponsor 34, joined, as always, by the Grizz. And Grizz, a very unexpected victory on Friday night. I must admit, when Collingwood got that 23-point margin early in the second, or actually, sorry, in the first quarter there, I contemplated going to bed.
Yeah. It wasn't a great start, was it? In the sense that, yeah, I think when I turned the score on, it was like 26-9 because I was a bit late and we sort of score. And then that Colin kicked a goal. I think it was Richard kicked a goal. It was 32-9. I thought, oh, this isn't a great start. But I suppose the most pleasing element of it is the fact that, unlike last week against, or the week before, I should say, against Geelong, when we were sort of challenged by Geelong and perhaps by the umpires as well, we sort of folded, whereas there seemed to be an element of resolve this week, and maybe we needed the Geelong loss to have that resolve and to sharpen our focus. But it was good to see a really strong response. And I said last week to Fairbump, and when we were talking about the importance of this game, you know, we needed a scalp, and not to necessarily stamp premiership credentials, but more just as a proof of concept that we have looked a better team this year. And we haven't had the results against, you know, genuine top eight sides, although Collingwood's fallen out, but that just probably shows the tightness of the ladder. We needed some proof of concept. And I think on Friday night we saw it. You know, we play well, we can stick with anyone, including, you know, the reigning premier, albeit, you know, in a lesser form because of injuries.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Now, I will just take this time to mention we are actually joined by a very special guest this week as well. It's Melbourne's second best poster ever from Big Footy. I'm sorry, but you're not propaganda, so I can't give you the number one ranking. That is, of course, Schmutt. Now, Schmutt is here to talk all things Melbourne, which we'll get to shortly. But before we do that, I'll just say, how are you going this evening, Schmutt?
Very well, thanks, mate. Looking forward to this.
And am I saying it correctly?
Yes, you are. Yeah, you can call me. You can call me. That's fine. I don't care if people know my first name. It's fine.
That's all right. But just back to Essendon, and feel free to chime in, mate, if you have any views on Essendon. You're probably not as passionate about them as we are, but you're right, Grizz, in that we needed a scalp because it has felt like we've played the bottom ladder and had some fairly unconvincing wins against the bottom of the ladder, although 4 points is 4 points, so you bank it and move on. And I think somebody actually compared us today to the 2017 Richmond, where they got off to a flyer, fell into a heap, got... They were 92-10 down at halftime against St Kilda in one game, and then they roared home again. So there's always that hope that we can roar back in the second half of the season.
Yeah, we've got the draw to do it. I mean, we've got Melbourne this week I'm not as down on Melbourne as others. I know they're missing a few troops. They're missing Max Gawn this week, but and obviously Christian Petrarca and a whole bunch of other players as well, but yeah, after you go to Melbourne, I think it's St Kilda, we've got Gold Coast, we've got games against a few bottom teams there, and then we play Sydney and Brisbane in the last two rounds. But I think we don't leave the state until we go up to the Gabba in the final round of the home away season. So if we can regroup and we can use, you know, Friday night as a launching pad, there's no reason that we can't have a really strong back end of the year. Now, I'm going to hold off on premiership contention talk. I don't know if we're going to win three of these games in a row against a really good opposition. And I know that there's a lot of talk about the competition being really even this year, but I don't think our best, if all teams play at their best, I'm not sure we're better than a Sydney. I don't think we're better than a Carlton. I don't even think at absolute best, I think GWS and Collingwood probably have us covered as well. And that's not, that's without saying, you know, Fremantle in Perth is going to be a brutal final if you have to play that. So there's a lot to play out, but certainly, you know, the evenness of the performance on Friday night was really impressive, and it just shows that when we're on, we can mix it with anyone. Whether that means anything in the back end of the year is irrelevant, probably at this point, but at least it was good to get a scalp and to at least shut some people up about us not being able to mix it with the good teams. And I think we've got to start when we talk about performances and the improvement this team has had. It's led from the front by Zach Merritt, who I think is probably the form captain in the competition at the moment, him and probably Paddy Cripps, and he was just outstanding. I think the stat that stuck out to me was he had 30 disposals and 15 score involvement. So every second time we touched the footy, we scored, which is just bonkers when you think about it.
Yeah, it was a fairly even performance across the team. The question that comes to mind for me, though, and it's one that you sort of touched on early in the piece here, is that we don't play well when we're expected to win. So I'm not sure how you feel about me saying this, Schmutt, and I'm going to keep calling you Schmutt, but I don't know how you feel about me saying this, but I think we're expected to beat Melbourne on this week. So I'm probably curious to see how that goes, because we were expected to beat Geelong, and, you know, third quarter umpiring, momentum switching, whatever you want to call it, aside, the reality was once the game was there to be won, the players just gave up. So beating Collingwood because there was no expectation is nice, but I think trying to beat a side like Melbourne this week is probably more important for me, and it'll be interesting to see how we perform then, purely because, you know, Melbourne, regardless of who they're missing, and they're missing Petrarca and Gorn, and we'll go into a little bit more about who they're missing later on, they're still a good side. So it's going to be a fascinating week to see how we bounce back from a win that was unexpected.
Yeah, and I think the thing for me is not necessarily who we're playing in that sense, because Melbourne's system will stand up, and we'll talk about Melbourne later. But for me, with regard to Essendon, they clearly, after the Geelong third and fourth quarter, set themselves for this game against Collingwood and said, right. And they put all their eggs in that basket, and they came to play. Obviously, not the first 10 minutes wasn't ideal, but after that they sort of steeled themselves. Okay, now back it up. Because what Essendon hasn't done, and not just this year, but probably for the past decade, is backed up the really good performances with a second good performance. It's generally been they get up for one of these games against Collingwood Friday night lights up and going, then we roll into the next week and we're still having the parade and the players aren't there or whatever, and there's something about the DNA which is not being able to back up these performances. So I don't care if we're playing Melbourne or playing North Melbourne or playing, you know, West Coast or, you know, 2001 to 2003 Brisbane Lions. Like, I want to see the same amount of effort and intensity and attention to detail on Saturday night that we saw on Friday night, because that will be the marker of where we are as a football team, because that's one thing that's eluded us over the past, you know, decade, is the ability to string really solid performances against any opposition together in consecutive weeks. And we're now in a point where we had a good game against Collingwood. We'll hopefully have a good game against Melbourne. Then we've got St Kilda and Gold Coast in Melbourne. Let's see a really strong month of form and not worry about who we're playing and just try back up performances with good performances over and over again.
The big performer for me on Friday night from a exciting point of view is probably Nate Caddy, because Nate's obviously, he got dropped for Goldstein and I'm not sure what everyone's views on that were. I mean, I know a lot of people are upset. To me, it made sense at the time because, you know, Nate's still probably bottom of the totem pole and Goldie hadn't been all that bad before he ran out of steam. So giving him a week off, bringing him back, I didn't think was the worst idea in the world. They do it again this week, I'll be filthy. But so I didn't mind him missing out. But when he came back on Friday night, that mark he took going back with the flight, when he had the defender in his face, and then he went back and he kicked the goal. And he kicked one goal, three, probably could have kicked two or three goals. I mean, the three he missed were from relatively difficult shots. They weren't, you know, by any means straight in front. So he's very exciting, and he's not as good as him. I'm definitely not saying that, but he did remind me very much of a young Charlie Kerner, just the way he moves. And I think if he's going to end up being half the player that Charlie is, we've got an absolute steal there.
Yeah, I'm going to hold off on comparisons just because he's played, what, three games?
Yeah, I mean, I'm only talking player type. The way he moves, because Charlie's a very athletic, gifted forward and comes out, bustles out and takes a big hard mark as well. And he's got a similar physique around him to Charlie. But, I mean, as I said, he's not Charlie Kerner yet. I'm not at all suggesting he's on his level. I'm just saying
sure,
the way he moves reminds me of Charlie.
Yeah, it's interesting because he's kicked like 3 goals, 5 to start his career, and there's been some easy ones in there. He kicked 2 behinds against Richmond, kicked 1 goal, 3, I think, on the weekend. So there's scope for improvement, obviously. He's had, I think, you know, 8 or 9 scoring shots in 3 games, which is pretty good for a young forward. He just attacks the footy so well in the air, which is really important because that's one thing.
Which we don't have either.
Well, yeah, because it...
And Harry Jones can't do it.
Well, I think it's interesting because Harry Jones tries to. He's just not big enough to do it, whereas Peter Wright has the size. I don't think I don't know what it is when he makes contact, but he doesn't play as big as he is, whereas Natty probably plays bigger than his size indicates. But I was really glad that we brought him in at the expense of a ruck. And I say a ruck because I wouldn't have minded whether they dropped Draper or Goldstein, because our record with one ruckman is 7, I think it's like 7-1, and our record with two ruckmen is like 3-4-1. So it's very clear that our balance is just so much better when we have the one genuine ruck and then we have Peter Wright chopping out. And I think I've said this for the last 3 or 4 times I've been on the pod, we need to stop looking at Peter Wright as a number one forward and start looking at Peter Wright as our second ruck, second forward. Because so if he can,
Cox
if he can get
though as well, so Cox,
he was
Cox through, so which was nice.
Yeah, but I think that was just when they couldn't get the rotation going. So I think there was one point where Wright was off the ground and Draper needed a break, so they threw Cox in there, and it worked, and that's great that can work. But I think generally speaking, you know, Peter Wright's averaging basically 1.6 or 34 goals a season as the second ruck. I think that's great. If you can get 30 goals a year from a guy that's chopping out second ruck and being your second or third forward, that's bonza. Like most clubs would kill for that sort of flexibility. So I think that's the mix going forward. And particularly from Sammy Draper, I thought it was his best game in ages. And there are some guys that just play better when they're the number one 80% ruckman. And it's clear that Drapes is so much better in that role. And with Max gone out on the weekend, we'll talk to Schmutt maybe about who might come in the ruck for them. There's talk it might be Tom Fullerton or someone along those lines. If this is the week, I think, for Sammy to really establish himself. If they keep the same structure that they have, and there's no reason why they wouldn't offer a winning team against good opposition to really tear this game apart against Melbourne.
Well, I mean, we do keep waiting for Sammy's breakout game, and it hasn't come yet, so I'm not sure we're ever going to see that just one game where he rips everyone apart. I know I actually thought his first quarter was pretty poor, but I think the whole team's first quarter was pretty poor. So you probably give him the pass on that. And it was good to hear Zach Merritt say after the game that they just backed the systems in. They knew they weren't executing properly. They didn't panic, so, and they just backed the systems in. But Shmo, we will go to you now, mate. So Melbourne's ruck stocks, you've sort of gone from chocolates to boiled lollies a little bit. You know, you did have Grundy last year, and that didn't really work. The Grundy-Gorn combination clearly wasn't a success that you'd possibly hoped for. And
I think
that's an
understatement saying it didn't really work. But yeah, okay.
And poor old Max is now out with what looked like a pretty innocuous injury. So who does come in for that spot this week for the D's?
So Goodwin's got a hard on for playing three talls in the forward line, which we finally did not do. Actually, did we do it on the weekend? No, we didn't do it because we had Petty. So Petty was out. We had Turner and we had Van Roo, and then Max was in the ruck. I think it'll be Fullerton. Fullerton's been named emergency. And as much as Goodwin drives, well, when I say fans, I think like I always find like big footy fans, including myself, are much more hardcore than your more casual fan.
Yeah.
They're going to get, because our subset on our board has a thread dedicated to how much we hate Goodwin's selection. But Goodwin is someone who will, if he's naming someone as the emergency, you generally think they're close. Like he doesn't just take the piss with who the emergency, and Fullerton's been emergency multiple times this year, so I'd imagine he comes in. Will Verrall has been okay at VFL level. I think Fullerton's been a bit better, and he's a bit older. But yeah, look, it's a big loss. Melbourne is 17th for centre clearances this year. I looked this up earlier today. Essendon are 5th. So I don't think not having Max Gorn is going to make us any worse. I mean, granted, 17th means we average 1.9 less per game. Essendon were like 2 extra per game. So that's not a huge difference, if you get what I'm saying. Like, it's bad to be that long. Yeah. It's not like, yeah. It's not like you can see. Yeah. The big loss is more the around-the-ground presence. Max bails us out when it comes to down the line, both offensively and defensively. He's obviously a nightmare for opposition coaches, although I want to just quickly mention, Essendon supporters don't even realise this probably because they probably don't really watch North games in their spare time, but Brad Scott has one loss to Melbourne in his entire coaching career.
Jeez. What?
And it was in 2018. He has one loss to Melbourne.
That's the about right. Yes. He was at North when Melbourne were rubbish. And,
yeah.
And there was, I mean, there was that period there where it seemed that Melbourne could only beat Essendon.
Well, Well, generally the underdog wins, so maybe we should get honest this weekend. But
I did want to talk to you, Shamad, about this. I would argue, and I think I talked to you about this last year, I would argue that Essendon versus Melbourne is the weirdest rivalry in the AFL. Like, the games are often the strangest results. If you go back to, like, 2000, I think it was 2011 or 12, when Essendon were 8-1 and lost to a winless Melbourne.
Was there? Yep. Colin Gale, 2 goals in last quarter. Yep.
You've got
them. You beat us by 150 the following year.
Yeah, and then, like, the D's lost to replacement Bombers in 2016 in round two. You've got Essendon.
Unfortunately, was there for that. Yep.
Yeah, you got Danaher kicking 1-8 against Melbourne at Etihad that year.
We had the exact same game at Marvel 2 years in a row off the Anzac game. Both years, 2 years in a row, the game went the exact same. Shit fest till halftime, then Melbourne pulled away, but it was an ugly game.
And then there was another game where, like, Essendon had 9 players with less than 50 games experience at the MCG, and Melbourne, like, somehow lost that one with, like, 5 minutes. Like, it's just that these games are often the strangest games of the season.
Absolutely. And I think I can tell there's a lot of trepidation from you guys. Look, I'm pretty comfortable to say I think Essendon are a pretty good team this year. I think they'll play finals. I don't think a loss to Melbourne would necessarily mean you are shit. I think you look at it in a block of form. Like, if you win 2 out of your next 3, because you said you play St Kilda and Gold Coast, well, Gold Coast would be a good scalp. I think you're in a good position. If you're going to be top 4, you need to win this game. I think that's fair to say. I think you'll play finals regardless, but if you're going to be top 4, they should win this game.
I think you raised the clearances differential there too as well, Schmuck, because one thing I was thinking today is, in previous years, it's probably been the midfield as well as Lever and May, because we just seem to love kicking it to them, where Melbourne have actually bolted Essendon, it feels like, because they've got those bigger bodies and they're able to do it. But Melbourne's midfield, as you pointed out, is not the same midfield as it was probably 2 years ago. You know, Track's not playing this week. Gorn's not playing this week. Unfortunately, Brayshaw's gone. And it's fair to say that Clary is probably not the player he was, say, 12 to 18 months ago.
You're being very soft on him. He's been awful.
Yeah, look, I'm being generous. But the reason I'm being generous is because I'm trying to ensure that you come back again next year when we play again. But
no one hates Melbourne more than Melbourne supporters.
No, it just to me feels like the midfield is the one area that Essendon really should dominate this week.
The ironic thing is, you probably will, but the midfield has been better in the past few weeks. They put Trent Rivers in there. We've been screaming for that because he is tall, strong, fast, great with ball in hand. Should have been there a year ago, but yeah, he's in there. They've ran Neil Bullen through there more in probably the last 4 weeks. They've been more adventurous. Like, Oliver's still in there and Viney, and I think Viney's nearly cooked at Oliver. Well, shit, he needs to show something next year or we need to get that contract off our books. But it's an unpredictable midfield. Essendon still should win the midfield battle, but I think it's more dynamic. And we saw this last year with Melbourne when Oliver went out. Melbourne's midfield stats actually went up last year when Oliver spent that significant amount of time out. Melbourne were the second best stoppage team when Oliver was out. I remember going back and literally getting the clearances myself every week to do the stats. So but I'm not saying we'll win. Yeah. I think Melbourne's win condition this week is that Essendon kicks it to Lever and May, and then Melbourne's got forwards, probably Fritsch, Pitcozzi, and Van Rooyen, and everyone, as every Essendon fan's favourite Melbourne player, Jake Melksham, get off the chain.
It was good to see Jake back. It was great.
Yeah, look, I was shocked he actually played all right. He might get another year. When he plays well, he's actually an important player. I've never seen. I'm like Essence Boys. I thought he'd be a dud for us, but he's actually been good. Like, not amazing, but he's been good.
The thing is with Jake, right? He makes the easy things look incredibly difficult, and the difficult things look incredibly easy. But I wanted to ask.
I'll never forget that goal against Geelong he kicked Grizz with whatever it was. It was actually funny because I was watching it at a mate's house, and when Jake kicked it, he's gone, he's forgotten who he is.
But that's milketh giveth, he taketh away. But like, the thing is with Gorn out, I tend to think that this, because Essendon plays really tight behind the ball. Like, a reason we don't take advantage of really poor teams is that we're actually quite conservative with our positioning behind the ball. We set up defensively, and part of the reason we've done that is we were so easy to score against for so long that I think Brad Scott's overcorrected to a point. But he's done it in a sense to shore up a defense and to allow guys like Ridley and McKay to zone off and take marks. But I tend to think that there will be significant parts of this game that will just turn into big kick to kick, because with no Gawn in the side as your designated down the line sort of guy, I tend to think you're going to play a lot more behind the ball, see if you can get Lever or May off the chain to intercept, and we're going to be really set up behind the ball as well. I actually think this is going to be a really low-scoring game. I would be surprised if either team scores above maybe even 80 points.
It's a Melbourne game. It'll be low-scoring. Yeah. I mean, look at West Coast. We scored 110. They sacked their coach because that's I totally agree. It's going to be a scrappy game. I haven't looked at the forecast, but I'd imagine it's always pretty dewy at nighttime at the MCG at this time of year. So games can get slippery very easy. I just think Essendon's got probably a little bit too much class and a little bit too much form. I think you've got a really good coach. Just a really quick segue. I know we're short on time. Is one of my best mates is an Essendon supporter, and I felt really bad because I watched him the week leading up to the Geelong game because we work in the same office, and he tipped Geelong, and I said, "No, I'm tipping Essendon. I reckon they'll win." He changed his tip to Essendon on Friday. He finally started believing.
No.
And then, of course, like all of you,
what did you do to him?
He was furious on the Monday, and I was like, "Yep, that was a pretty bad loss." But Essendon, I reckon Essendon, your Carlton game, you weren't that bad. I think Carlton are just a bit better. I reckon Essendon have probably played six really shit quarters of football this year. You guys might disagree, but I would suggest the Port game was terrible. I watched that. I remember watching that whole game when I was on holiday. And the second half against Geelong. I think Essendon have actually had a pretty good season. Even with the softer fixture, I still think, I think they'll win this week. And I think they're going to put together a good season. And look, I really hope we don't play you in the first week, because I've been to enough games where Essendon beat us at the MCG and there's 70,000 Essendon fans screaming whilst I'm sinking into my seat. But yeah, I feel terrible saying this because I know that filial trepidation, and you don't want to believe in the team because you've been burnt so many times. I don't know where you'll go this year, but I think they're a good team, and I think you can take encouragement from that.
The one area that I was concerned about, other than, say, the fact that we're going to kick it to May and Lever or not this week, was the Fritch and Pickett forward line, because it's a little bit smaller and they're obviously a little bit quicker. But Grizz, we saw on Friday night, and especially with Bobby Hill there as well, we rotated players through a lot more. So the old Eston way seemed to be we'd stick McGrath on him and just let McGrath run him, either shut him down or be running to the ground. Whereas now it seems that players are doing shifts almost. So, you know, Jake Kelly, who's clearly not the most agile guy in the world, even he went to him for 5 minutes to give McGrath a break, who then sort of went up the ground off the chain a little bit. Redmond did some time into him. Where defensively, I think we're a lot better at rotating, and I think this is going to be another big challenge, because I think Fritch and Pickett are quick players and players that can destroy you in a burst, and I don't think we have anyone who could probably match Aussie down back in pure foot speed. And Fritch is just consistently, he just always seems to have the energy in the space. So it'd be good to see how we go with our rotations again this week against what I think is still a fairly handy Melbourne forward line.
Historically, we've left defenders on an island. So we've left, McGrath, go on Bobby Hill, go on Cozzy Pickett, and we're not going to put any pressure on the football up the field, and you're just going to have to defend six inside 50s one-on-one against these guys, which I don't care if
Gavin
Manganine
in 1993.
Yeah, you're a back pocket in the Australian team. You're not going to be able to defend those guys one-on-one in space consistently. The reason that we were able to shut down guys like Bobby Hill and Toby Green when we played them against GWS is because there was heat on the football. It was coming in dirty. We had time to set up behind the ball, so they didn't get one-on-one. And if they did get one-on-one, it was not in space, and it was shut down quickly. And that's going to be the key to both Pickett and Fritch and to Van Ruin. If they get clean ball forward or center, it doesn't matter who you've got defending them. It is going to be bloody difficult to defend guys like Cozzy Pickett and Fritch one-on-one. And so it's really just going to be, we have to make sure if we're not winning clearance, that Melbourne are winning it dirty and it's not coming in clean.
Do you think McKay will go to Van Ruin, or do you think he'll play loose? Because
he won't play loose. He won't play loose.
He won't play loose.
No,
we try and get Ridley to play loose more than
If anyone's going to play loose, it'll be Ridley. Because
Malksham will go to Ridley, I reckon. I think that'll be a big match. He's actually played that role really well in the past, blunting the opposition interceptor.
Well, I hope Jake plays one of his best games for the Essendon Football Club he's ever played in.
I tend to think that Laverty will go to Van Ruyen, because that's sort of been his matchup. that type of matchup, and then Mackay will go to Turner if you keep the same forward line you had in. And we'll back Mackay to peel off Turner when he has an opportunity to contest a contested mark in defence. But if we try and set up anyone loose, it'll be Ridley. I suspect it'll be Kelly and McGrath on Pickett rotating. We'll probably send Redmond to Fritsch because Fritsch, although he's a bit taller, isn't like your contested marking 192 centimetre forward. He's more a mobile type. So we'll probably have... Yeah, well,
I reckon Laverde or Kelly would be great on Fritsch. Fritsch is actually like Fritsch regular beats guys taller than him.
I think Kelly would be part of the rotation through on him.
But it'll be a rotation of a number of guys. But Redmond's played on guys like Jack Darling at times. He plays above his height when required. We'll have defined matchups most of the time, but there will have to be a bit of mixing and matching depending on rotations. The other opportunity, I suppose, is, you know, Cox can roll back there if required. We've got Heppel who'll probably come back into the team. He's 190 centimetres himself, so he might take that matchup every now and again.
So, Chris, just before we wrap up, that is the one question that I did want to get your opinion on. Heppel and Goldstein, do they come back? I don't change a winning team. I just don't. Who do you drop for Heppel would be my question.
I would be tempted to drop Perkins. I know he does some really flashy things, but I think he's either down in confidence or he's carrying something, because at the moment he's not getting as much ball as he normally gets. He's not as impactful as he normally is, but I don't know, maybe because he's so young you just want to push through the form slump. But probably Heppel, and maybe you're dropping Perkins or Hind, but I don't think you're bringing the second ruck.
You would drop Perkins?
Yeah, I think there's a few posters that have pointed out that he gets lost in transition defense a lot, and he's had some odd moments with the ball, but that's not to say I would definitely drop him. But if I'm bringing Heppel in, he'd be on the list. Hind would be another.
I feel like Perkins looked amazing to start the year. That injury's really messed with him.
I tend to think he's carrying something. I don't think he's 100% right, but that's from the outside looking in.
Yeah, well, it's tough to drop Perkins. I take your point. It would create a reshuffle, but we'll see how we go. But that'll do us for this evening, lads. So thank you very much, Matt, for joining us. It's been a pleasure, as always, and we'll hope to have you back next year.
We're doing tips real quick before I jump out.
We can do tips, Matt. Give us yours real quick.
Look, I wouldn't be surprised if we win, and our form line is a little bit hard to get a read on because we should have beaten Brisbane and we should have lost to North, and the results were the other way around. I think Essendon will win. I think it'll be a crap game to watch. 11 points.
Melbourne by 8. This is another in the weird rivalry.
And I'll tip Essendon so that the Essendon fans aren't left on an island. But thank you once again, everyone. And as always, please like, subscribe, and tell all your friends.